newspaperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember...
Welcome to The Media Project, an inside look at media coverage of current events. I am not Rex Smith. I'm Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady, and now I'm vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. I'm filling in for Rex this week. With us today is Barb Lombardo, former editor of the Saratogian and adjunct professor at the University of Albany, where she has begun classes, Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fossfeld, and Dave Agostina, adjunct professor at the University at Albany as well, who has also begun classes. He's the WAMC morning news anchor and producer of this fine program. Thank you all for being with us.
Rex gets entirely too much time off, don't you think?
Well, not when Judy's filling in.
You know, well, after all these years, he's earned some.
Earned that paid vacation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
For this unpaid job.
Hey, let's dive in here. Let's start with fact-checking. There's been some criticism of fact-checking that has gone too far. We in the media love facts. You know, we're holier than thou. Everybody's got to say the truth, the complete truth, and nothing but the truth. But there's been some criticism that sometimes the fact-checkers go overboard, or the fact-checking doesn't mean anything at all in this topsy-turvy world in which lies don't really matter anymore. So should we still bother fact-checking, David?
Of course we should fact-check. That's our job. I mean, the whole point, the mantra that we go by is to seek the truth and report it fully, act independently, minimize harm. But if we're going to seek the truth and report it fully, then we have to point out when folks are lying. And when it came to the president of the United States, that was a hard thing for us to do for a long time until someone named Donald Trump came along and started lying and lying and lying and lying. And then suddenly you started to see news organizations saying that's a lie. Now you have misinformation, you have conspiracy theories abound because of social media. And I think it's the responsibility even more of the media to make sure they are fact-checking and getting things correct and correcting the record if they have to afterwards even. But as we know, corrections often don't get the same prominence. And I do agree that most people, especially politically, are in their own camps. And it doesn't matter if you correct it, they're still going to believe what they believe.
Untruths espoused by politicians is nothing new. Not at all. What's new is the audacity of what started with Trump, of outright lies that never end, that have no bearing in truth. It's not just twisting things or misinformation or trying to not tell everything. They're so outrageous that they need to be called out. And I'm grateful for the news entities that have fact checkers and then report them. The job for all of the media in quote unquote correcting these untruths is every time those things are repeated by the media, that there's a clause in the sentence or a following sentences that says it's not true.
All right. So the outright lies are easy, fairly easy. But what about the nuanced lies? So President Biden accused Donald Trump of having pledged not to accept the results of this year's election if he loses in the fall. And a reporter for The Washington Post described this as untrue, explaining that Trump just hasn't said that he would accept and previously said that the only way he loses is if the Democrats cheat. So how do you handle that kind of a nuance?
I'm a little unclear at the basis of this story. Who is it that's criticizing fact-checking? Fact-checking, as I think Barbara pointed out, largely emanates with the arrival of Trump on the national scene. And they're finally reached a point of years of his lying that the media writ large said, okay, we can't just print lies like this. We need to report to our viewers and our readers what is really the truth about what this person really said. Who should be against the notion of fact checkers except for those who are used to being liars and were getting away with it with impunity?
Well, some fact checkers are better than others. And again, you're getting these nuanced reports. For example, some people are saying that when Democrats accuse Trump of adopting the Project 2025, he has actually not done so. Or when people accuse Donald Trump of calling military veterans suckers and losers, there's disputes about that, and the fact checkers will bring that forward. And people who are of a liberal bent think the fact checkers have gone too far.
What people?
And there's a lot of discussion on social media about this, tons of it, especially the Washington Post fact checkers get a lot of criticism, as do the New York Times fact checkers.
Each side should be held accountable for things they say, and some of it is nuance, and some of it sounds like splitting hairs, but it's either right or wrong. And if Biden or someone from his campaign had said something that wasn't factually accurate, they need to be called on. It's not a huge story that should have legs for days and days, but it's important to be accurate. You're either right, accurate or not accurate.
If we agree, and I don't know that we do agree, that the whole notion of fact-checking began with the Trump administration and Trump himself, then we're only talking about 10 or 12 years for the media, again, writ large, to have advanced itself in this particular area, which is to hire fact-checkers, report on what is factual and what is not. And to the extent that there are problems with the way it's being done, it's only been 10 or 12 years. That's a nanosecond in the big scheme of things. And so is there criticism? I guess there could be criticism of how it's done, but I'm not particularly concerned about it. I'd rather see more fact-checking than less.
I think a lot of it is, how do I put this, balderdash? In other words, when we talked about Trump calling soldiers suckers and losers, it was somebody from his own administration who heard him say it to him. All we can do is quote the people who say things. We can't necessarily—
And then attribute it each time.
Right, we attribute it. Beyond that, what are we supposed to do? He has shown a proclivity for this, not only at D-Day in Normandy, but in other places as well. He has also spoken to a Christian group about how you won't have to vote again in the next election. He's talked about being a dictator on the first day. He didn't accept the results of the first election. Hey, there's a lot of evidence here that he's going in a certain direction. And just because politicians spin information doesn't mean we can't make analysis and say this is certainly what he's saying, what he's communicating.
And then in careful writing and broadcasting, you mentioned the 2025 report, Judy, that Trump has been careful not to say, I endorse this. He probably never will actually read it. I don't know. But I've seen the media reporting within stories about 2025 that project is created by the Trump crowd and by
former staff members
and the vice presidential candidate. So that needs to be clearly stated every time there's a story where Trump says, I've never heard of it, that those other things need to be put in there.
They ask him about it, right? Barbara said, well, you're on the plane, the picture, and then he just denies it. You can only do so much as a journalist if your source is going to constantly try to spin it and deny it.
Well, look at this one that's happening in the news this week about the Arlington National Cemetery. And
Great example. So
there's truths and there's falsehoods. And where Trump, from all the readings of this, tried to turn something into a media event for himself, publicity for himself, in a place where federal law prohibits this from happening, there's been gross untruths said. And then it becomes the media's responsibility in fact-checking within each report of this what really happened and what didn't happen.
And they're withholding information because the Trump folks say that they have video of this, and yet they have not yet, as we tape, released any video showing what they describe as this awful, including accusing the person from the cemetery of having a mental breakdown. When, in fact, what we know is that they're rolling out this criticism of the Biden administration's handling of Afghanistan, and why else would he be there in front of a soldier who died in the exit of Afghanistan if he wasn't using it for political purposes?
Well, what's become very troubling, regardless of what the lie is or how often he is lying, is that if you go to a supporter of Trump, and there are legion, there may be the same 40% all the time, and it's never going to get larger. But if you present them with an example of something that he said that is a flat-out lie, their instinct has become, I don't believe it. Who says it's a lie? Well, the New York Times said it was a lie. No, it was NPR that said it was a lie. They don't believe it, even when confronted with the facts.
And Ira, some of them say they don't even care if he is lying.
Well, the stealing of the election, one of the biggest, most pervasive lies that still has traction.
Hey, on the Arlington National Cemetery story, it's a big story. Is the media missing any element of the story? Are they asking some of the wrong questions here? Or are we playing
it up? I feel like you're the teacher who knows the answer.
I feel like they're accepting that it was a terrible situation that occurred, and we don't even really know that. And again, we're giving the Trump administration and their spokesman, Mr. Chung, his right to say what he wants. And yet, I want to see the video. Before you tell me that this is what happened, I want to see the video, because clearly you could tell the cemetery side, and the person even admitted it, was too scared to make anything out of it because there would be retaliation. So something's not right.
What a huge distraction this story is from what I would consider more important stories that would reflect probably negatively on Trump, like his law cases.
Yeah, unless you consider character an important quality in a future once-been president of the United States.
I do.
Well, it's another example of Trump tripping over his own feet, where he set up this particular photo event and he thought he would wind up with a positive image of him supporting the military and bemoaning the loss of these brave young soldiers whom he has criticized in the past as suckers and losers. And he stepped on his own long red tie by doing this and getting involved with this whole scenario with the quote-unquote mentally disturbed guard or whatever she is. And it's changed the narrative, and people are now thinking less about what he went there for and more about him desecrating the memory of soldiers who are buried in Arlington.
And that has all been reported. We have not avoided those contradictions.
It is true, though, but those images of him at Arlington Cemetery, his campaign is using those images, mm-hmm. and so he did benefit. And he also got the benefit of a diversion, a continued diversion, that he is on the side, I use the term loosely, of the soldiers who were killed during the Afghanistan withdrawal. I think he still walked away with some of that. The other point that I think is missing is the idea of, well, the Arlington officer doesn't necessarily have to press charges. Somebody can charge him. There are plenty. You don't have to have a complaint for someone to be charged with anything, but likely or not, it's not going to be Donald Trump that would be charged with this.
But another soldier whose grave you could see in apparently in the video or in photographs complained that that was happening, that that's not respectful to soldiers, and that there's a reason why this is kept private and you're not supposed to take pictures or video.
And what's the indelible image that will be remembered about this? Is it that he laid the wreath at the grave of the soldier, or is it that picture of him standing with the family right next to the tombstone with a big smile and a thumbs up?
Yeah, yeah.
All of the above.
Yeah, but it also, Ira, it goes back to your other point. You know, if there are already military veterans and military groups denouncing Trump for his treatment of soldiers, and yet there are still others who are in the military that support him. Yeah. You know, how is the media going to necessarily change that by what they report?
You know, has he been to these graves before? There's been some reports that he has interacted with the families of these veterans over the last 3 years, and that the Biden administration has not. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But it's a story that we're waiting for the video for. We're standing by for that. We haven't received it at this point. All right, let's move on. Vice President Kamala Harris has finally decided, I would use the adjective finally, decided to sit down for an interview with the press.
That's a loaded word, but go ahead.
It is a loaded word. In fact, we talked about
that. And as you hear this, she has.
She has. What do you think about the decision to choose cable TV broadcast to do this, and also the timing of it? Did she wait too long? What is the role of the press, the serious press, I would say, in seeking interviews with presidential candidates?
Well, look, I don't think there's anybody in this studio who would say that we don't want to see her doing this interview and a lot more besides, and that we hope that this is the beginning of a rollout, that she will be methodically visiting major broadcasters, minor broadcasters, print large and small, online large and small. There's a number of places where she could go. That said, taking my journalist hat off, I don't believe there's anything wrong with the way she's approaching this interview. She's not made any missteps. She came out of the convention in good shape. Her poll numbers are up. Why interfere sooner than she feels is needed to take on the potential negatives that might occur from a broadcast interview?
Listen, Ira, when you're in this room, you keep that publisher hat on. Barb, what do you think?
I'll go back to where I thought that finally was a loaded word, that Who the heck is clamoring and criticizing Harris for not having interviews with the press? I do not see a big uprising. Exactly. I don't see a big uprising among the public. We want to hear some journalist asking some really insightful questions of her.
Well, the Republican, the Republicans certainly are part of the public, and they are doing it.
Right. Well, the media, people in the media want it so that they can get their headlines and get their readers and listeners to focus on them. And then I think that one of the shortcomings in the media in general is that if you feel like you have a story, but you don't have somebody saying it, somebody bringing the criticism to the fore, like how are you supposed to tell that story? So then the Republicans naturally would jump on that, or they might even initiate it, and then together they're jumping on it. And I don't know.
Well, I disagree with the premise that the media wants this to happen so that they can get their ratings and et cetera. Well, surely that's a part of, you know, if you're trying to sell newspapers, you shouldn't be criticized for it, otherwise you'll be out of business. So certainly they want the attention, but it's appropriate for journalists to want to interview the would-be president of the United States and ask as many difficult questions as they can think of. That's just doing their job. But my point is simply, if I was Harris, based on how the convention went and based on how she was doing so far, I wouldn't be eager to do press interviews.
Your hat?
I'm going to try to tell it like it is.
Give me your hat, Ira.
I'm going to tell it like it is.
Give me your hat, because I agree with you. It's a political strategy. It's the best political strategy. We know that as soon as a politician who's new opens their mouths and starts to take positions, now you get opposition. So she is riding the joy. She is riding the least amount of information we can get, trying to make it into the presidency. I would say, in some level, that's kind of hypocritical, because they've been talking all along about their general themes. We know what the Democratic platform is. We know what her previous administration, the Biden administration, is involved in. Does that mean we don't want to know more? No, of course not. Journalism is supposed to bring light to the darkness. It's supposed to reveal these positions, what she thinks, see if she can go a deep dive into spontaneous questions and respond effectively. You know, we need to know those things. But the idea that we're going to force her to do the interview the way we want her to do it, it's just not going to be that way. And my interest is more in what you started with. Why did she negotiate with CNN and it end up being on CNN for this interview? Because let's face it, there's all sorts of media outlets out there that she could choose, but somehow it got negotiated to that. And to me, that's part of the narrative of when a new presidential candidate comes in, that at some point there's going to be a negotiated interview that they're going to sit down for that will serve as the interview.
Well, she would say that the other cable networks and broadcast networks have been covered or will be covered by other events, debates, and other interviews. I think a broader question and the more serious question going forward is CNN the right place to do this, not because it's CNN and not MSNBC and not Fox, but because the media landscape now, as David just pointed out, is so broad, and that there are numerous other places in what we might call the non-traditional media that are more important these days and more influential these days and reach people that the broadcast medias are not attracting.
Like TikTok. I mean, this week I asked in my class, what's your primary source where you get news and information? And the 12 students I have unanimously said TikTok or Instagram.
Harris has got a TikTok page or whatever you want to call it.
But CNN is widely known, widely accessible. I think most people are not going to stay up till 9 o'clock at night to watch the speech, or they don't, you could just go to YouTube
It's
going to be available to everyone. So I am interested, as you said, Dave, about what was the give and take that involved CNN. When we're having this conversation, the interview has not yet been recorded, let alone aired. So maybe next week we'd be able to assess what kind of questions did Dana Bash ask, and are they the
next
insightful?
Week it'll be old news, which is also part of this. The amount of interest this is allegedly generating for this interview, in 2 days we're going to forget about it, unless she makes some sort of horrible mistake that kills her campaign, and I wouldn't bet on that.
Or both sides get snippets out of it that they're going to be able to use in their advertising.
But don't we also know that no matter what happens with this interview, one side's going to spin it one way and the other side's going to spin it the other way? They're going to find something on the Republican side to criticize, legitimate or not. And the Democrats, if there is any fault with that interview that everyone can see, will spin it in a positive way for them. Right. So that's hard for journalists to work through that mass and try to present, quote, the truth of what happened.
Can I make an argument for a newspaper or a print interview with the potential future president of the United States? If you remember, Joe Biden has not done any print interviews. And I think a print journalist brings a level of detail and seriousness to an exchange. And it's more than just asking a question one time, twice, three times, and trying to get an answer. A print journalist can really delve into the issue in a level of detail that you can't get in broadcast. And I think that is something I'd like to see.
Does that mean that a print journalist will often ask a tougher question than a broadcast journalist? Or is that too stereotypical?
I think just that the conversation can go on longer and can have a lot more follow-up. And then the print journalist can take everything that was said and retell the story in a condensed way. But
you
can
even go back to your source, too, again,
true,
if you want clarification.
True.
I'm sure Judy was not denigrating the other journalists of the world who are non-print. There are plenty of excellent non-print journalists who could conduct an interview the same as a print journalist can. They just don't simply have the platform to do it.
One of my favorites is Jonathan Swan when he was still with Axios and he interviewed Trump, and it was during the COVID administration, and he came prepared with information.
He brought charts.
Armed with charts. He had notes, and he could refute on the spot what Trump was saying.
My only argument is that there's a level of control that you get with a video interview that you don't get with a print interview, even though nowadays print interviews are often recorded by audio or maybe even video and posted alongside the story. But the print journalist has the opportunity to go back and offer some context. I know that this interview with Harris will be recorded, but I think the print journalist will ask different kinds of questions and have more time.
Yes, the broadcast journalist, as we'll see with this interview with Dana Bash, has more limitations on what you can do. You can't change the question.
They're taping it this afternoon as we speak, Thursday afternoon. It's airing at 9 o'clock Thursday night.
But it gets edited, so they can ask follow-up questions and then edit it down to try to make sense
out
of it.
Not necessarily. Biden did an interview with Lester Holt of NBC that NBC aired in its entirety, and it was not edited at all. I think the interview was only about 25 minutes, but it was not edited.
Hey, can we talk for a minute about what's happening inside of Russia or what may not be happening inside of Russia or
what we don't know?
That we're never going to know. We learned that Russia has banned another 92 people from entering the country, including journalists from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. This just adds to a list of, I think, 2,000 people that cannot come into the country. It also includes leaders and executives from security agencies, military, industrial companies, and financial institutions linked to Ukraine. The list named 14 Wall Street Journal employees, including the editor-in-chief, 5 New York Times journalists, 4 Washington Post journalists, as well as a political cartoonist from The Guardian in London. This continues the challenge we have in terms of covering what's happening inside Russia, but as well as covering the war in Ukraine. What's a journalist to do, or what are news organizations to do about getting people inside of Russia and having them report from there safely?
Well, there was a concern. I know we discussed it here, among other places, that given the kidnapping of Gerskowitz and his ultimate release, and the kidnapping of Brittany Griner and her ultimate release, that many media outlets who have the wherewithal and the desire to be in Russia have been not doing it because they're fearful of their people being kidnapped. So not to be cynical about it, but this decision by Putin saves them the problem of worrying about whether or not they should send their own people. I mean, it seems to me the only way out is, if you're going to get accurate and complete coverage about inside Russia, is to have developed sources that are not fearful about getting to your journalist friends and telling them what's going on.
Yeah, and cue the dark music, because you could see what Putin is saying is somewhat reminiscent of what somebody over here says when he says, we're the enemy of the people. And the idea that if you don't speak nicely about what we're doing, we're going to get rid of you. And, you know, whenever there's a dictatorship, that's a previous inventor of this show, Alan Chartok, used to say, the first thing they come for is the media, the radio station, the newspaper, you know, and that's what happens in a dictatorship. So what are we to do? What can we do? Unless you're going to put your life on the line, go there and get arrested and put in jail for none other than doing your job of trying to report the truth.
And the very brave Russian citizens who do that kind of reporting with their feet on the ground for national media outlets are putting their lives and their families' lives at risk. It's really a troubling situation that I don't have the answer to.
Hey, meanwhile, we should note that Pavlov Durov, the Russian-born entrepreneur who founded the online communications tool Telegram, was charged in France with a wide range of crimes for failing to prevent illicit activity on his app. And he's been barred from leaving the country. He's out on bail now. Telegram is it's a messaging app, and it's similar to WhatsApp, which is very popular. But one of the things it does is it doesn't censor. But it's an interesting situation because this is a platform operator who has been criminally charged with what's happening on his app. Where is this to go? And is this a troubling sign? Or should the fact that there are bad things happening because of his app, should he be held accountable for it?
The latter.
I just think this is another one of those bumps, or maybe caverns in the road, where this situation has arisen relatively early in the time frame of the internet and what the internet is supposed to be and how it's supposed to be run and how, if at all, it's supposed to be regulated. And I don't know where this case will go. I don't know a lot about it, but I think it's going to be a test for where we go in the future.
Well, and who gets hurt as a result of the trade, the drugs that go through the app, or things like that? Don't we have to use some sort of a measurement that says, if you're hurting other people by what you're doing, we need to do something to regulate that? We're even seeing that just generally with social media and with cell phones in schools, because we're realizing the mental health issues involved with just being sucked into that world for so long. And, you know, these kinds of things are hard to decide on. But with these special apps and these other websites that draw people in and then turn out to be scams or using them to make more money and then ultimately they're getting hurt by it, you got to regulate it. I don't know how you do it, but you got to figure it out.
Yeah, we're not going to do it this week.
Oh, no.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thanks to Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, and David Gustina. I'm Judy Patrick. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to join us next week on The Media Project.
Such interesting people, when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such...
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, Adjunct Professor at University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
And to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.